Hello, this is Kathleen, and today, Thursday, June 11th, I'll be reading to you from the Daily News of Newburyport. Fun in the Sun. Salisbury Elementary students enjoy annual Field Day by Caitlin D. Salisbury. Salisbury Elementary School students tapped into their competitive side on Wednesday morning to participate in the highly anticipated annual Field Day. Wearing brightly colored t-shirts, students had their game faces on as they participated in the different events from tug-of-war to hula hooping. Alongside the students, there were countless staff members, volunteers, and members of the Salisbury Police Department and Salisbury Fire Department on site to ensure the day ran safely and smoothly. Salisbury Elementary School Principal Michael Astuccio said students look forward to this event each year. "It is a beloved annual tradition here," he said. Similarly, Jane Keeler, the school's assistant principal, said everyone from staff to students were glad to be participating. "This is one of my favorite days of the year. The kids, they're just so excited, and it brings the school community together. And everybody just really enjoys the day," she said. Keeler also praised local emergency responders who took time out of their busy days to engage with the kids and oversee different activities. "We're very grateful because it's not just about us and the kids. It's about the community. And you'll see we have the Salisbury Fire Department here. We have the Salisbury Police Department here. And every year they show up for the kids. And that really means a lot to us because it really brings the Salisbury community together as a whole. It's not just about a school event. It's really a community-based event," she said. Salisbury Fire Department Deputy Chief Andy Murphy, who was one of the first responders in attendance, said the department enjoys being a part of Field Day year after year. "This is a great event. The guys, some of them volunteer their time to come here. We have the duty crew that's here. It's just the kids in our community, and we're able to have some fun, do some fun activities with them," he said. Sergeant Tim Hunter of the Salisbury Police Department was also present and oversaw the tug of war, Hunter said. "Being involved with events like Field Day allows the police department to interact with kids in a low-stress way. They see us smiling. They see us as a normal person, other than interacting with them or their family at a police call. So it's just nice for them to see us like this," he said. The day also included both Astuccio and Keeler bravely entering the dunk tank, where many tried to dump the principal and the assistant principal in agitated water. The chance to dunk the individuals was given to students who read the most minutes and raised the most money in the school's readathon, and the staff who purchased throws. Proceeds from the staff's throws went toward a new playground structure for the school, as well as the previous structure was deemed unsafe in the 2023-2024 school year and subsequently closed before it was dismantled last school year. "I hope a lot of people try to dunk me," Keeler said ahead of her time in the tank. Above all else, Field Day gave kids a chance to bask in the warm weather and enjoy some time outside, something that Linda Gangamy, the school's physical education teacher, said is valuable. "I love seeing them active. That's our goal," she said. Furious Traveler by C.J. Fitzwater, a 250th anniversary story. Loyalist Governor Wentworth's ancient footprints. It's graduation party season, and we received an invitation to our friends EJ and Norma Dean's son Colin's graduation celebration at their mountain home in Wolfboro, New Hampshire. Wolfboro is also where Colin graduated from Brewster Academy. There, he served as class marshal and received the Ronald Buzzy Door Memorial Award. The award is presented to a graduating senior who best exemplifies outstanding leadership in academics, athletics, and extracurricular activities, while remaining a devoted friend to all. Colin has a gravitational pull like a star, and he attracts planets of different folks to his orbit. And if you've ever met Colin, you understand why he was chosen for that commencement honor. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Both sides of Colin's family, the Deans and the Silsbees, have long been known as friends to all. EJ's family, who runs the family business Fiesta shows alongside his legendary father, Dean Dean, trace their Salisbury Beach roots back nearly a century when the original Eugene Dean first came to town running games of chance. The Deans built a business on gravity and a reputation on being welcoming, generous, and a friend to all. On his mother's side, the same story holds true. Bill Silsby continued a business making homemade candy and ice cream at Willie's on the corner of Broadway and Railroad Avenue, where his wife Norma's family first established roots in Salisbury Beach in 1913. Once again, it was a business built on being a friend to all. Colin draws his DNA from two families where being a friend was good business. On the ride up, I took Route 16 off I-95 from Portsmouth onto New Hampshire Route 109, the Governor John Wentworth Highway, and immediately thought, wow, they named a highway after a loyalist. Not long ago, I had briefly studied Wentworth while writing a piece about Paul Revere. I almost wanted to pull over and start my research right there. After all, the Wentworth family had overseen New Hampshire almost since its earliest settlement. It was during the reign of King George II that New Hampshire's borders were established, defining the boundary as 3 miles north of the Merrimack River from Pawtucket Falls in Lowell to the Atlantic Ocean at Salisbury, creating the curvy border in northeast Massachusetts before extending straight westward to New York. The 1740 ruling by King George II ultimately settled the long-standing boundary dispute between New York, Massachusetts, and New Hampshire. It eventually created Vermont. King George II also appointed Benning Wentworth as the first royal governor of the province of New Hampshire. After receiving the royal appointment, after his uncle, John Wentworth, built much of the colony's infrastructure, he constructed a road from his summer home in Wolfboro to the western part of the colony in Hanover, where he donated land for what became Ivy League Dartmouth College. The school was founded for the education and instruction of youth of the Indian tribes in this land in reading, writing, and all parts of learning, which shall appear necessary and expedient for civilizing and Christianizing children of pagans, as well as in all liberal arts and sciences, and also of English youth and others. If you drive toward Wolfboro, a town granted to John by his uncle, their family legacy hits you directly in the face. Traveling up the Governor John Wentworth Highway, you pass the 96-acre Wentworth Farm, a former 4,000-acre plantation once owned by the governor before his property was confiscated following his expulsion in 1775. You also passed Wentworth State Park, which sits on, you guessed it, Wentworth Lake. Wentworth by the Sea, the Gilded Age Resort in Newcastle, New Hampshire, was built near Wentworth Coolidge Mansion on Little Harbor a century after John Wentworth was banished. John named New Hampshire's first five counties. Stratford County was named after Thomas Wentworth, Earl of Stratford, an ancestor of the family. Rockingham County was named for Charles Watson Wentworth, 2nd Marquess of Rockingham, cousin of Governor John Wentworth and Prime Minister of Great Britain, whose government repealed the hated Stamp Act. Governor Wentworth never enforced the act and became popular with the people of New Hampshire. Some historians believe his relationship with Rockingham helped influence the repeal of a law that fueled colonial revolt over taxation without representation. Wentworth remained popular until he found himself defending policies brought on by the Townshend and Intolerable Acts. The family's ties to English nobility contributed greatly to the rise of the Wentworths in New England, but that same loyalty would eventually bring an end to their rule. 5 months before Paul Revere's most famous ride, he was commissioned to travel to Portsmouth to warn of the possible arrival of British troops at Fort William and Mary to secure the colony's large supply of gunpowder and munitions. Revere travels through Newburyport and Salisbury on his way north. Upon learning of Revere's arrival, Governor Wentworth anticipated trouble. He warned the fort's commander, Captain John Cochrane, to be on alert and sent for urgent request for help to His Majesty's Commander-in-Chief, General Thomas Gage, in Boston. That help never arrived. The force of five men protecting the fort was quickly overwhelmed. Cochrane ordered the fort's cannons fired on the rebels, an act that could be considered the first military action of the Revolutionary War, though it is usually overshadowed by the more famous battles of Lexington and Concord. The gunpowder muskets and munitions seized during the raid were distributed throughout New Hampshire, and General John Sullivan later used many of those supplies during the Siege of Boston and the Battle of Bunker Hill. Ironically, Wentworth helped organize and strengthen the very militia that raided the fort. As royal governor, he took a hands-off approach to government and maintained a productive relationship with New Hampshire's elected House of Representatives. He was considered popular and was not viewed as a tyrant. The Revolution was as much a civil war as it was a war against England. The American Civil War pitted the North versus the South. However, the Revolution had actual neighbors on opposing sides. Wentworth chose to be loyal to the crown. They say every man needs protection. They say every man must fall. Yet I swear I see my reflection, some place so high above this wall. See my light come shining from the west unto the east. Any day now I shall be released. I shall be released, Bob Dylan. By June 1775, the conflict had escalated. Local militia surrounded the governor's mansion, forcing Wentworth to flee. He first escaped from his home in the south end of Portsmouth through Little Harbor, past his uncle's mansion, to Fort William and Mary in Newcastle, which was protected by the Royal Naval ship Scarborough, before later fleeing to British-occupied Boston. Wentworth was driven from New Hampshire, where the Wentworth family had become among the wealthiest in the province and its largest landowner. Benning and John Wentworth were New Hampshire's only two royal governors, ruling the province for a combined 35 years, before the latter met his fall. After the British evacuation from Boston, Wentworth went to London until he was rewarded by the crown for his loyalty and was appointed Lieutenant Governor of Nova Scotia. He became a land speculator of Great North Woods of Canada, but never amassed the wealth or influence that the Wentworth family enjoyed in New Hampshire. He lived the rest of his life with regret, missing the land he was forever banned from. John married his wife, Frances Deering, his first cousin, just 10 days after the funeral of her first husband, and shortly before being appointed governor. He was so devoted to his stunning bride that he ordered the towns of Deering and Francistown named in her honor. During their flight from New Hampshire, it is said that the horses could not carry Lady Wentworth and six chests filled with silver and gold plate, coins, and other valuables. Legend holds that the treasure was buried deep in the woods somewhere between Portsmouth and Smithtown, Seabrook, where it has never been found. Frances missed New Hampshire and was especially miserable in Nova Scotia until she found excitement when future King Prince William arrived and began an affair with the beautiful mistress. The drive to the Dean's home in Wolfboro opened my eyes to the history of this important son of New Hampshire. His ancient footprints remain, from roads and towns to parks, lakes, and landmarks. New Hampshire loved John Wentworth, who was born there. At least they did, until they didn't. I want to thank historian Tom Sanford, who holds so much love and knowledge of Portsmouth. He inspires so many of my stories, and he is always right on. I love you, Tom. Keep fighting and keep telling your stories. I'd also like to thank my Portsmouth tour guide, Bob Merrill, who took me on a tour of Wentworth's homes and escape route. Thanks for reading and supporting local journalism. Curious Traveler is a series of stories written by C.J. Fitzwater. If you're interested in meeting, sharing a meal, and telling your story, send them an email at cfitzwater@ymail.com. A St. Anthony tradition celebrates 50 years of a Gloucester prayer gathering by Gail McCarthy, staff writer. For half a century, the home of John and Angela Sanfilippo has been an oasis of prayers to St. Anthony during an annual 13-day prayer devotion. In honor of the 50th year, the altar is adorned with gold among dozens of saints and figurines, many of which represent the couple's travels to churches and shrines throughout Europe. Each night this week at 7:30 p.m., people gather at their house for prayers and songs of prayer. Like dozens of homes across Gloucester, prayer gatherings to St. Anthony and St. Peter, both in June, and St. Joseph in March, were plentiful among the many hundreds of Sicilian immigrants who made Gloucester their home. But even the fast-paced world of the 21st century did not impact the Sanfilippo devotion to St. Anthony, who may be best known as the patron saint of lost things. But he also has become the patron saint of so much more, including animals, the elderly, oppressed people, poor people, and shipwrecks, among others. Anthony of Padua, a Franciscan preacher and teacher, is beloved around the world. Devotions are given to courage to face life's challenges. The call to love and forgive, to be concerned for the needs of others, to deal with crisis, great and small, according to the shrine of St. Anthony. Sanfilippo is following a tradition that dates back to both her grandmothers in Sicily. She believes its origin in her family may stem from World War II, when her father, then 20 years old, became a prisoner of war of Nazi Germany after the signing of the Armistice of Casabila in 1943, which marked the surrender of the Italian government to the Allied forces. The treaty was signed in a Sicilian town. One result was that many Italian soldiers became prisoners of war under the Germans. Her father survived as a prisoner of war for nearly two years until the war's end. He would later marry. My grandmother promised to carry on the devotion to Saint Anthony if her son came home safe, reported Sanfilippo, who is the longtime president of the Gloucester Fishermen Wives Association. The devotion to Saint Anthony was also popular in the town of her youth in Sicily and was tied to the end of the tuna fishing season, giving thanks to their bounty from the sea. Sanfilippo came to the United States in 1963 and moved to Gloucester with her family in 1965. As a teenager, she attended Gloucester High School and graduated with honors in 1969. She was a member of the National Honor Society and served as president of the GHS Business Club. She comes from generations of fishermen, and the family had immigrated from the fishing port of Porticello in Sicily. She married a Sicilian fisherman, John Sanfilippo. The St. Anthony Tredicino, which means 13 days of prayer in Italian, represents a gathering of hope for the future and gratitude for Gloucester becoming her home. I think Gloucester embraced the tradition of novenas because we are not getting together because someone died, but we are together to pray for a lot of things, she said. Each one is praying for their own things, for peace in the world, for our families, and especially at the moment it is bigger, and we all need to pray for a lot of things. We pray for the young people who take on this world when we are gone. We pray for the abundance of the ocean and the earth to feed us. We pray for all the people who have left us, and we also pray for those who are sick. After the nightly prayers, they gather in fellowship for coffee and homemade Italian pastries brought by those taking part. The prayer gathering concludes with a mass on Saturday, June 13th, after which there will be a party and plenty of food. The traditional novena lasts 9 days. As a teenager in Gloucester, Sanfilippo recalled how they would walk around with pots and pans filled with food for many open houses during novenas. We are a family of great faith. My promise was whenever we would buy our first house, I would start the novena to St. Anthony, she remembered. That first house was on Harold Avenue, and a few years later on Beauport Avenue, a house which in 1991 had a devastating fire, although they would rebuild. The oldest child of an immigrant family, Sanfilippo was unable to attend college because of family obligations. But her lifelong advocacy efforts were recognized in the highest level in 2009, when she received an honorary Doctor of Letters, Humane Letters, degree from Salem State in recognition of her continued leadership in support of fishing communities. The degree also acknowledged her achievement in shaping the Gloucester Fishermen's Wives Association into a powerful force for conservation of New England's precious fishing grounds and heritage. Rowley announces mandatory outdoor water ban. Rowley. The Rowley Water Department, RWD, on Wednesday announced a mandatory outdoor water ban between the hours of 9 a.m. and 5 p.m., 7 days a week, effective immediately. On May 22nd, Energy and Environment Affairs, EEA, Secretary Rebecca Tepper declared a level 3 critical drought for the Northeast region, which includes Essex, Middlesex, and Suffolk counties. The designation follows years of below average rainfall and declining stream flow across the state, signaling worsening drought conditions and increasing stress on local water supplies. In addition to the level 3 drought conditions, RWD has limited water production capacity due to well number 2 being offline since October of 2024. The RWD is currently investigating a short-term solution to bring well number 2 back online. We are asking residents and businesses to refrain from non-essential water use outside from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. daily. There are a number of uses considered non-essential, such as automated sprinkler systems and washing your own car, a town official said in a statement. Water ban violations for first offenders are $50, $100 for second offenders, and $300 for third offenders. Music on the Mall series kicks off July 2nd, Newburyport. Rob Brune kicks off the upcoming Music on the Mall series on Thursday, July 2nd, from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Bartlett Mall. Music on the Mall features musicians playing non-amplified string and wind instruments from any park bench they choose. The series, approved by Newburyport's Recreation Department, was funded by the Newburyport Rotary Club, local doctor Divya Silva, and members of the community. Musicians scheduled to perform in July are John DiAplace, July 9th, Craig Branscombe, July 16th, Jack Garvey, July 23rd, and Joe Alwarden, July 30th. All musicians are paid via donations. Additional performances are predicted to take place in August and September. Donations for August performances can be sent to the Custom House Maritime Museum, 25 Water Street, Newburyport, Mass., 01950. In the memo line on the checks, please write in Music on the Mall. For more information, email nbpt108@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you all have a safe and well day.